Welcome to the Mindful Surf Podcast with myself, Will Foster, and my co-host, Liam, the creatine and coffee sipping Morgan.
Should you have that together, though? I was trying to read about this. It's not in the coffee.
It's not in the coffee.
It's kind of an accoutrement. It's a coffee.
Never even heard of that word.
It's a coffee chaser.
Coffee chaser.
Yeah.
Liam has just provided me a wonderful coffee, actually. Great head. So you provide good head, I have to say.
Oh, it's really good.
Hey.
35 seconds in.
And I haven't even talked about Rob Machado's pubes yet.
That's why people don't listen to this show anymore.
Because by the way, I've got a lot to share on Rob Machado's product, because I've been riding his Seaside. We shall discuss.
I saw you on it, actually.
We shall discuss.
As the last surf I had.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll talk about that surf too.
Yeah.
But what's the news? Fill me in.
The news is I nearly popped my hamstring on a beach in Saunton, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. But it has given me a little bit of a flavour of things to start working on as my ageing. Because you kind of, it's interesting. The news is that you sometimes think, still got it. You know, it's a cliche, isn't it? Still can do the things that you used to be able to do. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, if you don't keep doing those things to keep your body strong, it might let you down occasionally. Even lets you down when you do train. So,
if people saw how much I did and then saw how I surfed, they'd go, "Oh, well, that's highly disappointing."
So, but the news is, I went on this coaching course in Saunton, and we were doing beach games, right? So. But you get a little competitive in beach games. Who doesn't get a bit competitive? And there were a mixture of ages on there, some fairly young, fit fellas. And one of them was a sort of pop-up and sprint, you know, for anybody who does like beach flags events, at, like surf lifesaving, they don't know what this. But anyway, it's like a prone, lying flat, chin on your hands, pop-up and sprint. I'm pretty good at pop-up, as you know. That's the news. So I'm thinking, I've got this. I'm pretty fast on the pop and go. But obviously the thing that nearly popped as I got up and started to go was the old hamstring. Really, you know, really good punch in the back of the leg. So I came away from that with the intention to start training sprints and trying to start training that again. So the news is I went from feeling like a hero of I can train with the best to a bit of an old git. with a dodgy hamstring. And then I thought, I'm on the North Coast. I'll have a little surf because surf's, obviously we know it's way good. It's good on the North Coast. And I could see it was a bit flat, but you've gone all the way. Mm-hmm. And I got in and I think I got five waves in about an hour and a half as the light was fading. And it was pumping at home. I should have stayed at Sydney.
Oh, no, I remember that.
I saw you up there, actually. You sensibly, you were having a nice little jaunt with the family.
I was watching the rugby that day.
Yeah, I had to listen to it on the radio on the way back.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, we do invest, hopefully, in our body care as aging surfers.
That's what it's all about.
And sometimes, like you said, sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you get lessons. I've had a bunch of lessons recently. And just kind of... It's manage. It's two things always at once. It's acceptance and ambition at the same time. So acceptance is I accept that this is how things are unfolding for me right now. This is how this surf is going. This is how my performance is. This is how I'm finding my board. This is how I'm finding everything, life in general, even. And within that acceptance, there's that peace and sort of serenity of like, no, this is how it's unfolding because it's not always ideal. Whilst being grateful, obviously, at the exact same time, for what you are experiencing, what is going well. There's always far more going well than isn't, by the way. That's the truth of the matter. We can be so hard on ourselves in performance terms as surfers, and there's no need to be. Or in any sport, quite frankly. Especially with men. Men are particularly hard on themselves. And it's a sort of male ego thing as much as anything. But it's why oftentimes why women actually progress a lot quicker, sometimes than men in sports, interestingly, because they're a lot gentler in their approach. Firstly, they're not as aggressive. They want it as fast. They're not trying to impress as many people. Do you know what I mean? You could keep going with that male-female comparison. It's quite nice. But just sort of almost drawing from that lesson that you get from women, just kind of being a bit kind, a bit gentle, a bit just calmer in the process of it. But for me, it's a work on massively because I've really to-ed and fro with this new board. in that I've had surfs where I really have felt super on it with everything. And there was a surf I had at a nearby spot about a week and a half ago, maybe. I suppose a week ago-ish. Yeah, last Sunday, maybe. Called Puttsborough. That might ring a few bells to English listeners. But it can be quite a good wave. It's got good shape, good power sometimes. Some people hate it.
P-Land.
Old P-Land. And they call it the no-hander because it's got neither a left or a right. It's just a closeout. But no, it can, as long as the wave period is 9, 10-ish, 11, it's pretty fun. I think it's its sweet spot. And it was that period. We had 10-second period, 4 foot, pushing tide. I was on my seaside, the Rob Machado seaside. And it was just heaven, man. It was heaven. But I can also look at it in terms of what I did. Now, the night before, I ate in a certain way that I know tends to lead to better surfs the next day. And then I've just had this couple surfs recently. There was one, so I went on Saturday and I definitely was experiencing something in my back that I hadn't experienced for ages. And it's a thing that I get the next day after having had chocolate the previous night. And it's almost as if it's like a sort of inflammatory response. And maybe my brain's a little bit less reactive. Maybe my body's a little bit stiff. I don't know what it is. And I love dark chocolate. I really do. But good God, it doesn't love me. And I think to a lot of people, they would sort of go, yeah, well, you know, we have tricky surfs sometimes. And I would agree. I would agree. There is that side of surfing in life where you roll the dice. You're just eventually just not going to have a great surf. That's cool. But I also am really, really aware that chances are I tend to have better surfs when I've eaten a certain way. It's whether it's placebo or not, it doesn't matter. If you believe in something, that's all that matters. So my recent lesson is, it is in body care, but it's in value systems. I don't value dark chocolate and certain foods more than surfing. That little micro moment of just that little treat that might then mean the next day you're not quite on it. Maybe you're on it 92%, but not 100%. And I value that feeling that I get, even in crumbly waves, even in shitty waves, to just feel absolutely on it in whatever conditions come my way is my highest value. And it was a real lesson that week of just like having gone from that previous weekend. I had a really good all surf also in the week too, which we'll talk about later, on a shortboard. But it was just that I then had that one on the weekend just gone, and it came fairly spontaneously. So maybe I wouldn't have eaten like that the night before if I'd known it was coming in the diary a bit more. But it's that sort of thing where, A, yes, we've got to accept what's going on, but then also B, be able to review and be able to go, okay, well, how can I get better? How can I improve? What do I value most? Is it this or that or that? And if you can align what you value most in life with your actions, which is a lot easier said than done, you are actualizing. You know, actualization is what, 1% of the population, according to Abraham Maslow. It's a very small chunk of earth, because most of us have these kind of funny habits. You just got to look at your habits really closely and just go, right, actually, is that habit serving me? And I tend to do it habitually. Is it serving me? Okay, well, can I? Okay, maybe I could try another way and so on and so forth. It's not easy.
Well, it's a foregoing. We were talking about this last week. It is a foregoing of... Sometimes this is the essence and the beauty of surfing. Sometimes foregoing the instant gratification of certain things and the reaching for a crutch of another way of accessing talking to myself. I have been there. I'm still there at times. I've had a tough day, so I'll have a beer, or I'll have a tough day, so I'll have a bar of chocolate.
And so, remind listeners, proper job still?
Proper job. Proper, lovely. By the way, on tap, it's an exceptional drink. By the way, but I digress. What we have is this kind of, in this, and again, it's kind of related to the society that we live in with the always on. There's always a shortcut to a bit of a dopamine release. But because you haven't worked very hard for it in real terms, and it's basically covering up some of those kind of that need for something. It's not deeply satisfying. Whereas the surfing angle, and this is where I'm sort of tying it back in, it's incredibly difficult to access those moments of release in surfing at times, because you know you climb the ladder of progress. Some things are more difficult while others get easier, but you're never quite there at any time. Wherever you are in journey. So because of that, because you're having to work for it and you're making those sacrifices of that quick dopamine to ensure you get better at it, the moments you do get the flow of being on the your version of the best wave is deeply rewarding for your body and your mind and therefore your soul, right? And so that's why sometimes going, you know, going without the things that are quick win in order to get a better version of the difficult, you know, the harder to access release of dopamine and endorphins and all that is way, way more satisfying, but in the long run. And it's whether you're prepared to wait for the long run. And therein lies that kind of beauty of why surfing is so good as well with regards to that, is that the impermanence of it means that sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. But if you wait for it, it'll reward you 10, 20, 30-fold than you would get from your little square of whatever, Dairy Milk Dark, Montezuma's, Lindt.
Oh, you've nailed it, Montezuma. You have nailed it. I don't think there's a surfer on the planet who could really seriously listen to this and not just have a moment to just let what we have just discussed sink in. It is, it's fucking everything. You know, what is the mindful surfer? It's like, it is absolutely about aligning, isn't it? It's like aligning your behaviors, your actions, what you do with your life, with what you value.
The path.
And sometimes, by the way, in other surfers, it might not be surfing as the highest value, and they might still surf. For a lot of other surfers who are listening to this, who are that kind of surfer where, no, this has got me. I'm in. This is like the Kelly Slater quote. Once you're in, it's like the mafia. Yeah. You know, you got those surfers, and I'm sure that's you listening to this now, where you are just, it's like you, when you get that turn, when it happens in that special moment, because you were in the right part of the wave, you paddled into it well, you snapped in the right part, you got into the right position, you angled your body, you got, God, when it comes, it is so, so beautiful, that feeling. I had it this morning just now, just in our local break, and only really, I had a few, you know, fun ones. It was a good fun little surf. There was only one real standout moment. And how long did that turn last? I set it up, I took off, I got a couple of skips down the line. It started to bowl ahead of me, which is kind of ideal for where we live, because our waves are pretty tricky to surf because they're quite weak. So when you get a little bowl shape start to form in front of you, that's what you want. And I was in the right part of the board, and I was heading up the lip, and I was in a part of the lip where I don't normally carve, because I normally skip that section for the next part to then do a safer turn. So I went for a bit of what I call an unsafe turn. I thought, fuck it, I'm going to stick it on rail in this part of the wave. Yeah. I stuck it on rail as I'm kind of almost falling off. And I thought, right, I'm going to see if I can just push round to kind of make this work. And it did. And the board then just did the rest for me. And it just brought me right back to the foam. And I did a nice little re-entry. We carried on and did another little. How long did that last? It's like 4 seconds.
But
this is the thing. That the impact those moments can have in your surfing just make you review your whole week and how you set up your diary, your time management, how you set up your energy management, your sleep habits. Supplements, training, your work life balance, like conversations you have with your other half around, you know, trips or whatever you need to do to get that moment. And sometimes you got to wait for it.
You do.
Sometimes you really got to wait. Sometimes it's because you've been injured. Sometimes it's because you haven't quite got your diet dialed down, whatever. Sometimes you can't access it with time. Whatever's getting in the way, who knows? There's all these things, barriers that are getting in the way. Sometimes it's crowds. In itself, it might be that the waves are there. Let's say you lived at Snapper Rocks.
Holy moly.
Let's say you're listening to this right now and you're about to go in at Snapper Rocks. And that is my hell, by the way. That is my version of hell. That is like having a girl like the most hot. And by the way, my wife's the hottest woman in the world, in my world. But in another imaginary world, while I dig a fucking great hole for myself.
I'm not saying anything. You keep talking, William.
Liam's wife listens to this and goes, Liam, you were very good. You stayed quiet. Well done. We'll dug a hole. Anyway, I'm digging my hole.
I'll give you a bigger shovel if you want.
Thanks, mate. Come on, just can you help me out? And it's that she's got naked. She's got onto doggy style. She's got everything out on display. She's just laying it out. No, you can't touch it. Just look. And no, you can't touch your dick. No, don't touch that either. Oh, God. That's Snapper Rocks. And you're just, oh, you're on the edge of joy constantly. Oh. And you've got a boner. Because here's the thing. The thing about having the boner is that you're being aroused by...
This is your Rob Machado...
With, Rob's naked.
Sunday.
He's got a massive bush on him heading down the line. He's like flying out. No one's even looking at his hair anymore.
That's his new board.
He's
the boner.
It's just a dick.
You get a
board.
Big one. Yeah. You get a medium sized one. And you get a very little one.
Oh, you get that's a little one.
The Rob Machado boner.
I'll go middle. He's heading down the line at Snapper. Kelly's getting some. Mick's getting some. Then there's like 50 other locals who are way better than you'll ever be. Then you've got the next 50 locals who, you know, and so.
Have you watched the point of view Snapper surfing? It makes me anxious for weeks on end.
It's insane. There's other spots in Oz. There's Noosa, is Byron. There's spots around Byron. Anyway, and it's that thing where what I just had today was 2 to 3 feet mush, brown water, no one in.
Yeah.
Doing turns. I'd 8-10 ways in 45 minutes. I don't know, on my own, just paddling around. I would take that.
Yes.
Every time. But we're digressing. The point is, whatever barrier going back can and often does get in the way, takes a certain mindset to remain calm amongst that. Calm, but still ambitious. You're still setting that goal. It's such an interesting thing. We can sometimes, you don't have to set a specific goal as a surfer, but it's certainly, I think if you want to be the happiest surfer you can be, is always be on the hunt for that feeling.
Yeah.
And knowing deep down, here's a belief system that's really big, that it is coming. Do you believe as a surfer that feeling is coming again soon? If you do, it will come.
Which where it draws a parallel with life, because
there you go.
You'll be up, you'll be down. Yeah. You won't be up all the time. They won't be pumping every day. Good, actually, because if it was, you wouldn't appreciate it when it was.
Damn straight.
And, neither will it be, you know, mill pond flat every day, because that's just how it works. What makes it really magic is the, like I said there, is the effort that's required to access that sort of tiny little moment of flow or joy. And because it's hard work to get there, it's more rewarding. There's more and more research being done on that. We sort of knew, and I kind of was looking, you know, me when I sort of get lost down my sort of Eastern philosophy, and we are definitely not the first people to sort of draw this parallel. It's been done for many, many years of surfing, with Jerry Lopez, like, you know, making it most famous. This kind of tie-in between surfing and the Taoist sort of philosophies in life, and the kind of principle of that the Bodhisattvas would say is something along the lines of, you know, enlightenment is unattainable, which is why I try and attain it every single day. And you kind of draw that parallel with surfing. It's like surfing perfection is unattainable, which is why every day I'm trying to catch it and get there. And so whatever your idea of the end goal is always best kept sort of completely out of reach in a way, or nearly within reach. But the more you reach for it, the better you get, and the more you learn. And the more you learn and the better you get, the less you know. And therefore, you have to learn more about it. And for every stage you get to, you realize there were things at that stage that you didn't know. But then you get there and you're like, oh, there are other things I can do. I didn't know that they even existed. But because I've now put in all of the training and all of the effort to reach this stage, or the rung of the ladder, or the room that you're in a whole new room, and you go, wow, there's more stuff to go in. But that's not the last room you're supposed to be in. There's another one. There's another door at the other side of that, and it's kind of like this infinite loop, then, isn't it? Of if you keep going, of improvement. And I'm sure if we got and when we speak to them, like Kelly and Rob, we call them Kelly and Rob now, don't we? Because they're friends of the show. When we get them on, it's saying, I doubt they even see that they have reached what they would like to reach with their surfing ability. Because they're enlightened to a point of knowing that there's more out there. But it doesn't mean that because there's more out there, you're unhappy now, because it means that you appreciate what you've got, but you also realize that you'll never reach that enlightenment, in inverted commas. But that's not a bad thing. That's actually the point. And so if you apply that to all levels of learning, you know, because I sound bad now saying, I haven't surfed for a week, which now I'm like, that's quite a long time, week and a few days. But I've been chipping away on this guitar for years, right? Trying to make it better and better. And it might sound terrible to everybody else, but if you make progress on anything like that requires like lots of practice and not a lot of progress, but when you do, but you don't realize the gains you're making. It's like doing one press up and two press ups and three. And by the end of the year, you can do as many as you like. These little micro progress points that you hit without quite realizing it add up to a big thing. And then suddenly you can do the thing that you thought was an impossibility 12 months ago. But it's not anymore. But it's only not an impossibility now because you were prepared to just keep knocking on the door of progress every single day for that last 12-month period. What's for certain is if you don't knock on the door, you'll never get beyond where you are now. So anything that requires surfing is the pinnacle of this in many respects. Effort to get a tiny bit of reward almost makes everything around it better as well.
Totally does.
If it was constantly rewarding, like you said earlier, you'd adapt.
Yeah.
And suddenly it would wear off and it would be not the struggle that it needs to be in order for it to be joy-giving.
Yeah.
It's such a strange paradox.
It's not supposed to be easy.
If it was just constantly easy, you'd get numb.
Yeah.
You'd get numb to it. You'd stop going in.
Yeah.
I had a surf, what was it now? It was about a year and a half ago now. It was not Christmas gone, but the Christmas before. And I was on the North Coast. I had two back-to-back surfs that were as well as I've surfed ever in my life. And it was on Puddle HP. It's a great board that. Might get another one again one day. Helped me progress in many ways because it's a forgiving board. But it still kind of is like a shortboard. Yeah. So it's just got a great rhythm and flow to it. Anyway, I had two surfs there and I wrote about them in my surf diary. And it was an odd feeling because in both surfs, I had been so in the zone, so in the flow, both surfs,
mm-hmm.
that where I'd pretty much in all my whole surf career, because I got to look at those surfs, I still look at them today and go, okay, I felt like in my world, I felt as good as I could feel on every wave I surfed. So on every wave I took off on, mm-hmm. I couldn't have done in my potential any better. And that was in every single wave. For some reason, just there's two surfs, one at Pusper, one at Saunton, and I was getting into the bowl vertically, I was tail releasing, landing, back to the foam, Kang, flow to the next turn, and all feeling based. If I look at the footage, we'd all go, is that your best? Yes, it is.
But that's anyway, all it needs to be, by the way, your best.
Exactly. And there's a whole conversation in that.
Yeah.
But I look at it and it was really, and the feeling that I got from it was very interesting because I sort of left the beach. My hunger for surfing had just simmered a little bit. I walked away going, huh, think I quite like struggling a little bit, not loads and not loads all the time. But the struggle is what takes you into the zone, isn't it? You need that little bit of challenge, that extra challenge to just kind of take you into that higher level of being in the zone. It's not like I wasn't getting challenged by the surf, because obviously surfing is always really challenging. It just felt like my body would let me just do whatever it wanted to do that day. And especially, and also, like I said, the day before, and that was it. I've in 16, 17 years of surfing, I've only really had in a way, I could honestly say like two surfs maybe, that where I left the beach fully satisfied to my own level. And it was actually not as satisfying a feeling as you'd imagine. That was what's so paradoxical. I think I leave the beach normally with this little sense of, oh, you know, maybe I could switch up my fins a bit because that was a bit like that. Or maybe is it the board? Or I think I need to go back and get that little bit of extra stretching done on the ankle there, or strengthen the hamstrings a bit, or switch up my mindset slightly where I kind of approach things a bit more like that, or try that break there. There's always something I take from a surf where I think, next time. Yeah, okay, next time. And that is motivational juice. It's this constant slight struggle of, yeah, go on, next time. And the joy is going back to the drawing board, having got out of the ocean, to talking about it with someone like you. Chat. It's often a quote what my brother used to say, which was there's twice as much joy in the discussion of the surf afterwards as there is in having it. When you're at the Bristol Wave, we always joke about that, don't we? We always say that it's in licking our wounds after our session and all having a good chat that actually you have just as much, if not more fun than when you were actually in the water. But you raise a very, very good point, dude. And it's that, yeah, we do. It's very stoic. Very, very stoked. So recent surfs, Stu, come on. What was the last one? Was it the one that we had?
I'm trying to think.
City, that was an amazing surf.
Because I hadn't surfed at the beginning of the year very much. And then I had a flurry of surfs, which got me back into it. And now I have to check my check my privilege and all this sort of stuff, where I get to surf quite a lot. So if I don't surf for a week, it feels like a long time. On balance, I think, I mean, you surf a lot more, but I think you kind of, when you spread it out over the year, you're surfing once a week at least, or maybe twice a week. And so
sometimes you end up on a 20-day run in summer. Like I've seen you do twice a day, like, and that'll catch up your average, won't it?
Yes, it does.
You know what I mean? That's huge.
Yeah, one. Increase my batting average. And then, but I've started just noting it in the calendar so I can, because I have to go back to doing my little gratitude book, but I've just been putting, so I can check. You know, we have a calendar in the kitchen with all the kind of crazy busy stuff that's happening within a family house. And I've started to just note my surfs and my swims on there again, just so I can look and think, oh, thank God, aren't I lucky to be able to go and do that on a Friday or whatever. So we'd had a great one, which we could talk about. But they start to merge together after a while. Once I've had a week off, I'm like, which one came first? Was it that one there? I had this sort of, like I was joking about at the beginning, this surfing Saunton, where I almost felt obliged to go in because I was on the North Coast. And I, for anybody that's listened for a long time, you and I love Saunton as a sort of practice net, right? It's a great beach, big, long, open expanse of sand on the North Coast. You can find a quiet bit. It's very crowded usually on that sort of first bit where you go down the slope to the right-hand rocks at the car park. But I was up there anyway, doing a sort of session, a training session with the guys at Surf Life, at the Surf Life Saving Club there. And I thought afterwards, it's quiet, I'll get in. I've seen a few waves coming through as I was sat like in there, and it was kind of flat. But once I got my suit on and I'm in, I was like, I've got to do this. I've got to stay in. I got five waves and it was great. But I have to admit, I had to check myself on the way out because I was a bit disappointed, thinking, I was starting to do the what if. What if? What if I'd have just gone home early? I could have watched the rugby or surfed, you know? But as it happens, it's all good training because they were so micro that it changes your surfing game, right? Catching, riding, whatever you're doing. And it was just nice to be in a different beach. But then you and I had a surf at one of our local beaches, and you were on your seaside, and it was brilliant fun. It was one of those old times, wasn't it, of great. And we've had a couple like that in the last 4 weeks where you go, this is the best thing. This is millionaire surfing, as you call it. You could have all of the riches in the world and not and you could live at Snapper, but not access that level of joy from brown waves.
Spontaneity.
Amazing.
Two things. When you have zero, firstly, zero expectation, coupled with spontaneity, coupled with social, the right kind, hopefully. Those three together is the highest stoke in surfing. It would have been crumbly on one bit, it'd been quite fun. We had no expectations. We thought, I'll just check the next spot. Let's go and have a look at it. We were in our suits, we're just walking. We walk along, sun setting, beautiful orange sky.
Gorgeous sky.
Gorgeous, and the sound of the waves, and it was quite small, and we're sort of just, no expectation, nothing. Just having a nice chat and enjoying the chat, again, probably a little bit more even than the surf, because it's just nice being social. Get around the corner, have a look, and we just started shouting, screaming, that sort of rush, because there's no one on this certain sort of semi-secret spot that we know. And we're just like, whoa, and we are literally frothing. That word, frothing, to be frothing at the mouth. And zero expectation, key, done. Are you being social? Yes, bang, done. Suddenly, spontaneously, there's this session that turns up, and oh my good God, the shape of those waves. I think waves are really interesting. Waves that are in that small to medium bracket that support good surfing for average surfers, that are clean, they've got good angular bowl shape to them. They let you get on them in and early to set up your rail, your turn, your everything, is the fucking dream. And you could be anywhere on the planet having that. And you could not have been happy. We could not have been happy. We were just absolutely buzzing. And the next guy that came in, I thought, okay, we've got a third guy now. That's cool. But he was such a led. He was a cool guy too.
Great, yeah.
And the board, the seaside on rail. Oh,
it was amazing gorgeous. What that board was doing.
Oh, it's lovely. It's been a really cool board. It's kind of, it's not the best groveler in a way because it's quite pulled at the tail, quite pulled at the nose. It's very, very meaty in the middle, like almost excessively. But when you get it on rail, oh, on a good sort of only small sort of small to medium sized wave, it is a beautiful feeling on rail.
It looks good.
Gorgeous feeling. But you were ripping as well, and it was just... So I think the big lesson out of that surf is go into surfs if you can, with as little expectation as possible.
Yeah.
So, so important.
But then you've had some meaty stuff as well, haven't you? Because you were on the North Coast.
Yeah.
Because I know people kind of on our socials see our posts and different sort of... And the board got... You posted the seaside with your... Yep. The kind of sort of board chat that we have. But you've had some sort of meteor surfs on the North Coast, which I fancy getting back up to at some point. But yep. Yours were pretty good, weren't they?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, we went to Croyd in the week. And again, if you don't live in the UK, just check out the photos of Croyd, Croyde.
That'll be the last time you get...
And the last time I ever get a chance to...
That's the last time you don't get chased out of the car park.
It's the cat's out the bag. It's called Croyd.
It was Will that secret Foster spot. Speaking.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be regarded as one of the world's best beach breaks. I think, like, obviously, swell.
Ah, mate, what's he talking about?
Yeah, mate. You want to see this spot, mate. No, Croyd's right up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
For sure. Well, you know, one of Europe's best beach breaks, so therefore it's got to be put in the world category because it's that good.
Yeah.
And I was on the shortboard. Rory Morgan, friend of the show, encouraged me to go on the shortboard. It's really interesting shortboards. They sit in the water a little deeper. So the first thing that puts you off when you've been on your higher volume boards is that you sink as you paddle. So you probably got to put in, I'd say 10 to 15% more effort into your paddling. Okay, that's cool. So it's going to be one of those kind of surfs.
Good workout.
It's a great workout. When you go to duck dive, that's easier.
Yeah.
That's the immediate first thing. If you get real steep takeoffs, that's easier. But what I found was really interesting was that overall, when I go for a proper wave, like there were some sets that were sort of 3-ish feet overhead, maybe even more, mm-hmm. who knows? Proper meaty waves. Is that shortboards then are way, way easier. Because as you're falling in, that nose has already, it's already got its rail in and across the line that you're trying to take because the board's dropping. It's like a sensation of it dropping underneath your feet. So where I get more confident in surfing is as waves get steeper and bigger, up to a point. If waves get beyond double overhead, I start to reduce in confidence. Like I think like most surfers, really, because it just gets really big. Mm. And you're just like, oh, have I got the equipment? Have I got the ability? Because it just gets sketchy and whatever. But up to about head and a half double overhead, if waves get steep, I find it personally much, much easier because I've got the paddle strength to get into that.
Yeah.
But the big thing that doesn't get held back in me is takeoff because my takeoff is for sure the weakest bit of my surfing. But because the board drops under your feet, all you do is sort of look ahead and just look. Mm. So, and as long as you keep your gaze ahead to where you want to go, which is very challenging, obviously, because you want to do nothing but just look down at this sort of board.
Sheer drop.
To make it more secure, which makes it worse. Yeah. But just look ahead to where you want to go, let the board drop. Then, yeah, you're off. And I did a couple turns that felt, ooh, God, I'd like to get this a bit more often. But it was very, very important is just immediately let that go. Because I think that where we live... the lifestyle that I have with a family and access and so on, you know, if maybe it was my old lifestyle, I, you know, before kids, I used to every year go to somewhere like Indonesia or Sri Lanka, or I would do more Portugal trips and stuff like that. But realistically doing trips nowadays with kids, it being tricky and I have local waves too. So I do get to go in is that it's settling that back down and letting go of that past self in us. I think as surfers, we're all going to have to get really good at accepting that the past is gone. Letting it be where it belongs in the past, doesn't exist. Moving into the present. What do you enjoy now? What do you have now? What can you make the most of now?
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. Because that's always where you're going to get the best stuff. And so I kind of came away from that surf with two kind of feelings, really. It was like one, wow, that was so cool. Steep. Big turns, easier. You feel it less in your joints because it's just rail to rail. Another little feeling, which was, oh, yeah, I used to do that all the time. I kind of miss that. So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the surfers, we have these minds and they interpret our surfs, our lives in certain ways.
It's learning to be grateful. I mean, that's kind of a cliche now. We've talked about it for many, many episodes, but be grateful for what you have, whatever it is. If you're surfing slop, be grateful for it. If you're surfing big waves, be grateful for them. If you're surfing any, you know, whatever conditions you're presented with. I mean, the luxury is, as I was saying earlier, being able to get in the water at any time and surf. So that is the major thing that you're looking to do. So if you're unhappy in those waves just because they don't match the expectation of what you think your level of surfing is, then they're always going to let you down a little bit. But if you go into each one and just say, ah, you know, whatever waves I'm surfing, I'm happy for, and I'm just happy to be in the water. It's a bit like when we talked about, we used to talk about the shit wave police, and you say, you know, what is shit about getting in the water? What would you rather be doing? You know, work, mowing the lawn, what, you know, whatever it is. If you've got the luxury and the access to the sea, you're already winning. So if you can sort of tally that with a kind of gratitude practice for that, and an ability to sort of really, you know, not long for things that you don't have, or not fall into that trap of comparison, like comparing what you might have, then you'll always kind of have a great, you'll always have a great time, or you'll more often than not have a better time than you won't. But if all you're doing is comparing what other people have, or you're looking for something that you would rather surf, then you're never going to be in a good place.
No. Yeah. Absolutely not, dude. Mate, what an intro.
What an intro. We've got like a little bit of battery left intro. For the next sort of 25, 30 minutes of the show. Perfect. I think we'll last.
Perfect. Dude, moving on to segment number two, bit of mindfulness. Let's take a breath in through the nose. Let's breathe in for about 4 seconds. Breathe in. And then breathe out nice and slowly for about 8 seconds. And then breathe in again through your nose. And again, breathe out. And take another breath in through your nose for about 4 seconds. And breathe out for about 8 seconds. Let's do one last breath in through the nose. And breathe out really slowly. Great job, guys. Great job. We're all going to get triggered emotionally. And we feel most of those triggers sort of in our tummy, running up into diaphragm, I suppose, into the throat. And it's a bizarre thing, a feeling. It's a beautiful mechanism that was created in evolution in order to keep us safe. And hopefully fire us up if we ever needed to get into a fight as well. But as modern humans, we've got lots of interesting, very illusionary based places from which to be triggered, but that are also still linked to your basic evolution, your basic physiology. And it's kind of ludicrous that the amount of things that can and do trigger us on the most petty, benign, and completely and utterly meaningless level, except it never makes it not meaningful to either A, be honest about in yourself, and or B, talk about or manage better with better breathing. Because I think that's where sometimes it can go wrong for a lot of men in particular. Again, I think, oh, it's just this that I'm struggling with, just this little thing, which some people will go, oh my good God, why are you struggling with that? Because that's not even a, well, because I do, right? Because someone else doesn't. Someone else is like, oh, I know, I never get triggered by that kind of stuff. And you go, oh, no, I do. And then they go, oh, but I don't get triggered by that. So what's vital is that you are kind to yourself. That is what's vital.
Yeah.
If you ever get triggered by something that's even very, very, very small, honor it there and then with your breath and acknowledge that it's happening. That's the key. So just acknowledge it. It's cool.
Yeah.
No one's fucking judging you apart from yourself. And by the way, even if people are judging you, can't control that.
Well, that's what can make the triggers worse sometimes, is the denial of them and covering up. But, you know, it's sometimes when you get these things out of the way, you tell other people, you share it with other people. you know, what your fears really, especially when it comes to surfing. You know, one of the things that I did very eventually and early on was to say, I just don't like big waves, actually.
Yeah.
Don't get off on them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it has to be the right time. I'm not going to chase them all the time. And so, but if you don't admit that, you can be triggered by your lack of honesty about the thing. So then you start defending a position that isn't yours. It's lost in all of the emotion of your feeling of I should be doing something that I don't like doing, or I shouldn't be doing something that I do like. So the more you kind of express that and get it out, the lighter you feel, and therefore the better you get, because you're not what was this sort of Polonius, is it Shakespearean quote about to thine own self be true? Well, if you're not, then every cell in your body knows you're not being true to yourself. It knows that you're lying. The person, rather the entity that knows you're lying, is your own body and yourself. And so you kind of, therefore, it creates more of a trigger, because once that's challenged, and to an extent you're kind of doing the challenge in yourself, because you're trying to sort of paper over these cracks, it makes it worse. So then you're tense, and your body gets into a place that you could easily avoid, actually, if you just were like, I don't care that I'm, you know, I'm not trying to protect my ego anymore. So I'm going to admit that this is a thing that I like, or this is a thing I don't like, and I'm going to pursue this. Doesn't mean I'm not going to work on those things, but I'm actually just being honest about where I'm at. And particularly when you're in surf groups, right? We're real bravado when it comes to what
group,
do we like.
Group mentality and all that. No, it's true.
Especially negging out on stuff.
Yeah. No, I know. No.
Rubbish.
Because it's much more vulnerable to be positive, actually, in the end, in that circumstance. But I had a chat with a rugby dad yesterday, because I go and volunteer sometimes to help out with the rugby club, with the juniors, as a sort of well-being coach, something. Sort of mobility, breathing, mindset stuff, and bringing that to the table. And there was a dad there who was asking me lots of interesting questions about his son, who's quite a good player, and he wants him to help his development and so on. And he asked me what could he do for his confidence, because one of the things that a lot of the coaches have said about him is that, you know, he is good, but he just needs to back himself. How can he grow in confidence? My reply surprised him, and that was kind of cool, because I like it when that happens. You know, really, he's like, really? And I said, encourage your son to talk about his lack of confidence. That will make him feel more confident.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know why?
Because you're going to be unconfident. Like every human's unconfident. Every single human on the planet has unconfident thoughts. It's thoughts. You voice the thoughts. You've changed the energetic reality of them away from what seemed real to, oh, wait a second, the more I speak about this out loud, oh yeah, no, I suppose it is all made up. Oh, it is literally made up. Or maybe it's made up because you've used the past too. So that's when the mind's very clever, because he goes, oh, no, but look at the past. Because yeah, but then you go, well, it's still made up, because in the moment you might do something brand new, because we are creatures of pure possibility. That
correct.
Deepak Chopra, in his book, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, law number two, the law of pure potentiality.
Yeah.
It is the potential that in any new moment, this moment, the next one, you might completely surprise yourself.
Yes.
So that being the case, that being the truth, that's not an illusion. The illusion is the past is haunting you still. Oh, yeah, but my son, he's not very good at...
I've always been...
Correct. All this BS.
But I really relate to that, because I remember saying to some quite good friends, actually, we got together some group of friends that we hadn't seen each other for a long time, and we go back a very long way. We were chatting, and I said, I've always been nervous in like social settings and social, you know, I kind of feel sometimes like I want to be out there and I'm not really very comfortable. It makes me anxious. I don't like to use the word anxious, because it's not really true. It's more, it makes me... Yeah, you know, uncomfortable. Not sort of, and they couldn't believe it. No, really? You're confident. You talk. You like hanging out with people. We have a good time when we're out. I'm always seem to be. I'm usually quite good at making new sets of contacts and friends. You know, I've made a living from kind of putting myself outside of that comfort zone. But I hadn't really spoken about it to anybody. But as soon as you do, you're like, oh yeah, Fair enough. And then other people say, yeah, me too, actually, I don't really like that either. And you're like, well, you as well, Kai, you, and you're one of the, I see you as really confident. And everybody's kind of dealing with their own shit. So it goes back to that thing to say, don't compare, you know, don't assume that the person that you're actually comparing yourself feels any better or doesn't feel the same than you do.
But I love all this because this is this kind of stuff that Jordan Peterson talks about. Although I've digested a little bit less of his content as the years have gone on, because I find him sometimes, he just sort of just goes on and on, maybe a little bit too much in my view.
I agree.
Because he sort of bangs on and on, and it's like he bangs the drum.
I think he gets
very political.
He gets stuck in his own positions.
Very much, but you still have to hand it to him. Got some phenomenal points. And what I think of when I think of this is I think of, let's talk about just this for a second. Get better at that. Because suddenly other blokes will go, oh, right. It softens everyone. Women are naturally incredibly good in groups at, oh, yeah, and they don't take the piss out of each other like boys do. Although I like that bit about boys. I like that banter, that piss taking.
Yeah.
But, you know, imagine if a girl went up to a girl, mate, what the fucking trainers are you wearing?
Yeah,
you know,
who cut your hair?
Yeah, fucking what you done to your hair?
Yeah.
You know, you get out, you, oh my God.
Well, the reverse.
Talk of the town.
Well, this is what's happening. The reverse is sometimes true, isn't it? Is that we might go to one of them, oh, what the fuck's happened to your hair? Thinking, yeah, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, it's like, wow, you look amazing. And inside, you're thinking,
right,
you did that.
Right, this is the thing.
So you got to get it out there. No. Can I also say, you're absolutely right. I wouldn't it be a wonderful place to get to again? Because you mentioned people like Jordan Peterson. Everybody's a divisive character now, isn't it? Oh, we don't listen to that. How great if we can all acknowledge that sometimes the people you don't agree with on everything or you don't think are right on everything can make good points. But and we will listen to everything in its whole, in the whole, and all of the nuance that goes into that, and appreciate that there might be people on another side of a debate. There might be stand-up paddleboarders that I'm prepared to just hang out with and listen to. I'm being facetious, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Somebody who's riding a foil through the lineup. So all of these things,
Liam's favorite.
But you can sort of get common ground with everybody, and the more common ground, and the more we don't deny who we are with each other, the better we will all be for I think any community that you're in, and that includes surfing. So you're right. There's sort of this kind of idea that by admitting something that other people say, don't say that. Don't admit you're scared you're a boxer. Don't say you're scared before you go for a fight. The other guy's going to beat the shit out of you. Well, maybe what? Do you know what I mean? Who isn't?
Well, I would then say maybe he's more ready to smash the other guy. And I said this to the dad yesterday, and I was talking about this. It's the same in surfing. When you go in with a really mindful respect of, no, I'm feeling some fear right now, that paradoxically you're actually better equipped to deal with it when you're in there. Because it's all a paradox.
Yeah.
So the child or the boxer or the surfer or anyone who can say, oh no, I'm feeling a bit unsure about that, but I also underneath, I have a good feeling about this. I can sense that little bit of fear that's there and lacking confidence is more just excitement with the brakes on, as we like to talk about.
And
it's like a little bit of edginess that actually is maybe partly why I do what I do here.
Because it's
putting me in this challenge that then if I can bring everything I can bring to this, then I'm going to get a flow experience out of it.
And here's the thing. More often than not, the monster's not as scary when you shine a light on it and have a look, because that's got its own foibles too, than it is if it's just an hidden dark corner where you don't even confront it. So as soon as you face down, that is a sort of cliche that I hear a lot, but you know, you suffer less as soon as you shine a light on the thing that you're most frightened of, and at least get it out in the open, because then it's a known quantity. You're dealing with a known quantity then.
Yeah.
And as we use the quote all the time, the Seneca thing about we suffer more in imagination than we do in reality.
Damn straight. Dude, segment number three, mind, body, stoke. Things Liam and I have been doing with the mind and body to raise the stoke. I have explored the surf skate. Again, just recently, the one I bought off yourself.
Have been on for ages.
Interestingly, Noel Salas reckons the slide is the most, when he said that, I like the last sort of 7 years of me testing out surf skates flash before my very eyes. Because I agree. I've said this to you before.
I've had two just gathering dust in this head.
Right. Slide. Really. Because we could just quickly say this, right? You've got Carver. You've got Smooth Star. You've got Yao.
Yao.
They're the biggies. Yeah. Maybe the Jamie O'Brien. I can't remember his. Anyway, he's not with those guys anymore. Those are the three. They're the real big ones you'll see. Then you've got Two Bare Feet. Dog shit. They're awful.
Yeah.
You've got Slide. Slide sit in the middle. Slide are the on the lower end of cost in terms of cost range. Wherever you are in the world, get hold of a Slide. If you live in Oz, live in America, try and get hold of a Slide.
They're pretty good.
They are the most like a surfboard. They don't. The Yao's a bit skiddy. The Smooth Star's really pivoty. The Carver's, you know, they're all. You've got to nurse them sometimes and not push too hard. And the Slide will stick to the road. It's sort of it's like glue. It's like you push through rail. That's what you're trying to practice, rail turns. And I was really humbled. I went on it on, I can't remember what day it was, last week, when it was a dry sunny day. And I was like, there's loads of work to be done here. I was doing my turns, and I was like, oh yeah, that bit of my shoulder's got tight this winter. Oh, that bit of my hip is not quite functioning. And I actually came away going, no wonder I've maybe not quite hit my optimum just a couple of surfs recently. I'm kind of looking, I was on the surf skate and it was a cool, so what I recommend anyone do if you can access a surf skate is just get on there and take your turns very, very slowly so that you can tune into all the little mistakes that you make throughout that cutback. You know, where do your hands go? How far across is your eye when you're looking across the bowl? How good is your transition back to toe rail from heel rail or vice versa? You'll be able to pick up on a bunch of stuff. But if you go really, really quick and you're trying to do loads and loads and loads and loads of turns in a bowl with other skaters all around everywhere and you're trying to impress or you're trying to get a mega workout, you're not going to be able to tune into that. But I think if you grab a surf skate, get a really gentle road, not a steep road at all, and just slow everything down because we get in such a rush. It's so exciting. Mm. You finally get on the wave. Do you know what? It's like shagging a girl for the first time when you're 16 without a condom on. You put it in and you just go 1,000 miles an hour and before you know it, it's all over. You've got to
If you want to complain to the Mindful Surfer podcast, please write to William Foster.
You've got to slow it down. Yes, you're having sex without a condom on now. That's great.
That's irresponsible, William.
Well, right. Listen, it's just... I put the board in the road. I didn't even pump back up the road. I wanted it to all just be about the turns. And I did notice it. I got back on my board on whatever day it was. And the little synaptic shift in the brain and body was there still. And then I went, oh my God, stay fucking humble to the surf skate. It's still a great bit of the quiver. And get on it regularly. Don't go on steep roads. Not necessary. Just a little gradual road. Set up the cones if you want to. It's quite fun. And I would say, yeah, fine, you can go at it like a workout if you want. That's great. But I would encourage almost all average surfers, all of us, obviously barring your Noel Salas's and your Kelly Slaters, but all of us, to just slow your surfing down into the bit by bit by bit that helps you when you then stand up on a wave in the ocean, not try and rush it.
Yes.
But just work on your rail game.
I'd love to have a go on the Ombi bowl.
Yeah, it's sick. It's really sick. You're building one in your garden. So.
I haven't been on a surf skate for quite a long time, actually. We hit them hard at the, you know, at the beginning when we started this, didn't we? And I've been pretty lazy. Actually, the more I've surfed, the less I've surf skated. So I need to kind of keep that practicing.
Get back on it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's good fun. Yeah, it does work. It does work. Have you got anything on body?
My body.
How's your shoulder been?
It's interesting. It's still a little bit niggly, but I've started to kind of bring in some exercises back. I'm really still continuing like this leg program to kind of keep my legs training. As I mentioned at the beginning, I'm starting to kind of just build in and work on sprints because having had that little scare, and I've got some things I wouldn't mind doing coming up that I'm kind of just starting to build that in. And I need to kind of check myself discipline-wise to say, you know, maybe even a couple of times a week to do a couple of hill sprints and that's it. And then just build it up very gradually from there. The other thing I'm working on, which absolutely nothing to do, but I'm fascinated by, but nothing to do with surfing necessarily, unless you're holding onto your board doing some big duck dives, is grip strength. And it's connection to things like longevity and overall health.
Yeah.
I think I have pretty weak grip, not weak grip, weak forearm strength, and that obviously then grip strength. So I'm starting to try and train different grips on the chin-ups and pull-ups, like the pull-ups particularly with the muscle-up grip, which is just like a false grip on the top of the bar. That sort of slight hand position shift makes a pull-up, if you haven't been practicing, incredibly difficult. So it challenges your sort of ability that you thought you had. Because previously I've probably been hanging on more with my fingertips climbing style-wise than I have with my grip. And so you then get sort of fascinated by this stuff. And I'm like, how else do I do it? And there's another little exercise where you load one end of a dumbbell, called a dowel then. So you load one end of a dumbbell with weight and use that as a sort of pivot movement to strengthen the grip. I'm just going to see if it has any impact on my...
masturbation?
Yeah, exactly.
Technique? That. No.
Grip, pull-up, dip, strength.
It does work.
And
mate.
See how we go.
It does work.
Especially as you age. That's what I was reading about, you see.
I have a few staples in my routine. The hex bar deadlift.
Yep.
Massively notice the just general daily life isn't quite the same unless I've done that once every 10 days. Testosterone being another one part of that as well. Muscle mass, leg strength through turns.
Yeah.
Hangs.
Yeah.
Just hanging, constantly hanging all the time. Just stretch the shoulders. Yeah. Good for the grip. The deep squat stretch.
Yeah.
That we talked about. Overhead press with kettlebell to keep the shoulders balanced because they get so imbalanced from surfing. But the other one that's in there is a bizarre little exercise, and it's bicep curl to rotation. So you bicep curl and you rotate and you go down on 20 seconds.
Right.
Like that, with a really heavy weight, the heaviest you can handle. And it's your brachialis. Because your brachialis, this little forearm muscle here, showing Liam now, would love this on video one day, it gets really undertrained.
Yeah.
And so I think there's two big ones. One is the battling ropes.
I used to do a lot of that.
The ropes are phenomenal. You used to come to my class and do those. And
that was they were timing. Big when I was boxing.
Yes.
That was a huge part of our training regime.
Really
battle
good.
Ropes.
Yeah. Battling ropes are great. And then it's those functional curls, but it's mixing up the grip like clearly you're doing. It's really, really good. And I notice it. I do. I notice it in function in daily life, just little things. Grab a bit of shopping, grab a board, you know, grab a kid by the scruff of its neck, move, or whatever.
It challenges
whatever
you.
When you grab stuff, it does really help.
And it challenges your thinking and your body's reacts differently to what you're doing. And I think it stops that homeostasis, doesn't it, where your body gets used to what you throw at it.
Interestingly, there's some great research on grip strength in relation to lower back pain. The greater the grip strength in someone, the less chances of getting lower back pain, because it makes sense. If you go to grab something and your grip does it for you, you're putting less strain on your spine.
Which is interesting. We're running out of juice, but I was going to talk, we're going to do this next week, about the Paul Check, who's one of your heroes, critiquing Peter Attia, who we also talk about, form in the gym.
Yeah. Well, this can be our surf media. Go on.
Well, this is surfing. So cut a long story short, Check is puffing away on his bag of weed or whatever he's smoking.
He's such a dude.
And Peter Attia is showing a technique around taking actually some pressure off, he thinks, his lower back and his core when he's doing pretty deep squat training. Now, the point that Paul Check makes when he critiques this is to say he totally deactivated his core. And if you want functional strength, especially for surfing, you need that kind of functional pattern that comes from a whole kinetic chain being strong, your whole supporting train. And he makes one quote, which if you overtrain a muscle that drives something with an imbalance to the thing that stabilizes you, like your core, he says it's like firing a cannon from a canoe. So, you know, what's it going to do? He's going to blast you out of the water. He's going to blow the canoe away because the power of the push, there's not enough ballast or strength or anchoring to make that gain that you've had in the muscle strength functional. So you should stick to doing things that challenge the core. Don't bother taking your core. And he makes another good point, which I relate to, having fractured the L4 and L5. He said that Atiyah's got like a fairly bulging lower back. And so when he says he's getting relief, he strapped this weight belt around his lower back. And he said the reason it feels good for him is it's giving him some degree of compression, like sort of release, because it's pushing his bulge back into a sort of more anterior, if you like, position. And so I'm like, holy God, this is fascinating. Two things from the point of view of what I've just said. Functional core strength is hugely important. For me, I've felt the gains massively in my surfing. Secondly is how you can have people who are experts in a field showing you to do, telling you how to do something, and somebody else who's had years and years of experience of that thing being able to actually pull it apart very, very coherently. So that for me was mind-blowing.
It's really good. And there's a Czech quote, which is isolate,
yeah,
to integrate.
Yeah.
If you need to isolate your hamstrings, please do. Calves, please do, you know, just anything. Quads.
Yeah.
More isolated-based exercises. That's great. They can sometimes be much less impact. They can be done in machines. They can be really useful. And keep going. It's essentially, in a way, machine.
Yep.
Machine-orientated exercises. Leg presses, leg curls, leg extensions, lat pull-down machines, chest press machines, pec decks. We've all seen them in the gym. They're everywhere. Okay, these brilliant machines. They isolate.
Yeah.
They could, in a mindful human, I don't want to say should, make up about 1/5-ish of the program, 1/4 maybe, depending on the age of the person you're helping. But ideally, 3/4, 2/3 is all body movement, natural movement, yeah. Twisting, pushing, pulling, squatting, lunging, in just your body, just the way it moves. It's always going to be the way. And Czech is he's the master of that. If you want the master of functional training, yeah. Full stop, check out Paul Czech. Done.
There's an element that does this way relates to surfing. If you can't do it without weight, don't do it with weights to start
Fuck
with.
Fuck yes.
And so that goes to surfing. If you can't do it on land or move, you're not going to be able to do it in the water.
That's why the surf skate's so relatable.
Yeah.
Yep. Whew. Guys, fuck me. That was a great sesh.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Awesome.
And we've got the battery. If you want to complain about the show, please send...
Totally. We just, go on.
I'm
just going to say, I love Machado's boards. I love his fins.
Yeah.
What next?
Yeah. Send us recommendations of what you're riding and then where you're riding it.
Yeah.
And the other thing we didn't mention, but we were talking about before the show, check out Dylan Graves in his trip to Italy.
I know. Best bit of content you'll see for ages.
Brilliant.
Awesome guy.
Other than that, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers. Bye.